Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
One more page, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Kamal Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 31. NASDAQ Futures down 160. Looks like the boom is off the rally here a little bit, but it was, you know, it's quite a rally, so it's not a surprise we're going to come back a little bit here. It doesn't mean I'm short spoos or anything like that, but it's not really a surprise. We could keep going for Bitcoin does seem like it's keeping going forever, but do we have Mr. Kevin?
You do. You do. And short spoos sounds like some kind of digestive disorder.
Well, you know where the term spooze came from.
We did this before, because I know I always knew the Standard & Poor's thing, but the U, and I think that you told me that was time of the year?
All of your commodities all have a month, and the month is a letter. So, like, I think June is M, and July is N. Like, July corn is CN. June wheat is WM. And I'm not, you know, I'm a little fuzzy on this stuff, but the big months are the September is SP is U, and December is Z, and so if we had September, we'd have to be July would be N, and then we fit when March is. But when the S&P futures first started trading, when you're on a trading floor and you're yelling all day, what you want to do is you want to, what's the word, syncopate what you say into things that you can say all day. In other words, nobody would ever say three-quarter bit, because Q is a horrible thing for your throat. If you say that about 100 times a day, you're not going to talk that night. So three-quarters became the orders. So the order bit meant three-quarter bit. So when the S&P futures first came out, it just so happened to be the September, which is real easy to say, the spooze. So when you switch to December, nobody ever went to spizzes, right? They stayed the spooze. So no matter what month it is, they're always the spooze because of that. You're not going to say the sperms because it's June, right? You could, but it wouldn't be as easy to say. So spooze became the term. Weird stories, huh? From trading floor jar. But you always try to syncopate as much as you possibly could. If ever you said...
Well, Tom, I always say start out the show with a bang, with a really great topic that's going to get everybody excited.
Well, you know, but it's, if you find out when people are yelling all day long, it becomes something. Like if you were to say, if you were to yell out 60s, quarter bid, if you just said 60s, it meant front month. So you didn't have to say November 60s. Right, you cut back on that. So if it became the December 60s, then you would have to say December. If you just said the 60s, it meant calls. Because you didn't want to have to say 60 calls, it's hard to say. So 60s were the calls, but if it was the puts, you'd have to say 60 puts. Nobody's going to know this stuff for another 10 years. You slice it all back. Slice it all back. So what's going on in Indiana?
Michigan. Indiana, it's gloomy and rainy and just not so hot.
I think a few of the guys want to meet tomorrow and watch the game in some emporium instead of going to the game, which I might show up. What the hell?
Well, if you do, yeah, let me know. So we have people who are planning to be there?
Well, this one in Blue Island is the bar.
Oh, you're talking about South Suburbs.
Well, you know, we're taking a trip to the island, Stony Island, Blue Island, you know. Those islands.
Yeah, so it's going to be island style, huh?
Yeah, we're going to be island style.
Okay. Well, excuse me. The you know, I'd join you in Blue Island. I don't know if I can make it in time though.
Yeah,
I'm gonna sub for a teacher tomorrow morning. So
really,
well, good I'm for not you. Gonna be done until close to noon.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I sent out that kind of snide thing about the basketball players, and you know, I don't mind ruffling the feathers of our Notre Dame group. They need to wake up, some of them, but some of our retired guys. I wonder if they do wake up. But that's another story. And you sent back, well, did you hear? You know, do you see what the coach said and so forth? And I think what we're going with this, Kevin, and this is my read of this, is that at some point nobody's going to care what any of these coaches say. It's all going to be the numbers. They've started down this road, and it's a slippery road, and they're not coming back. I mean, somebody somewhere is going to say, hey, look, you guys, you like putting your asses on a private jet and going to Timbuktu to interview some high school kid and watch him play and talk to his parents and have a great steak dinner with a shrimp cocktail and get back on the... But you know what? We had the kid for 1 year and he's gone. And now other people are getting people the other way. Plus, we got to pay the kid anyway. What are we doing? I mean, I think...
Well, actually, I think most coaches actually hate the recruiting process.
Some places, yeah. Some places, maybe not so much.
Well, a lot of them do. I mean, it's a grind.
Well, yeah, I get it. I get it.
Especially if you're an assistant coach, because the, you know, in many cases, the head coach becomes the closer, and it's the assistants that do all the traveling and, you know, everything that's involved there.
Yeah, but I'm saying it. There are some people who love getting on a private jet, going someplace, staying in a great hotel, and wandering around. I mean, there's people who like to do that. Plus, it is an expense, right? What is a private jet run to go look at some high school kid, for God's sake?
Yeah, I'm not sure how many assistants are on private jets, too. I mean, that's...
Well, how are you going to get anywhere out of South Bend?
We have airplanes.
We got... I mean,
we have these new newfangled airplane thingies.
I know, but where... I guess my question is, from South Bend, where can you fly directly? How many places?
I don't know. I should check it out. I know you can fly Las Vegas. You can fly several vacation spots. Obviously Chicago. But if you're going on a recruiting trip, you're going to take multiple flights anyway. So
yeah,
it doesn't really matter. You're hopping from one place to the next.
Well, my point is that somewhere along the line here, they're going to get some dude. I used to say with Coke bottle glasses, which you can't say anymore, but I just did. You're going to sit somebody down. Somebody on the board, of course, the Notre Dame board doesn't have any power, but if they did, somebody's going to say, I would like an assessment made of how much it costs to recruit somebody, how long the normal person's here, what we had to pay them to get here, and versus just grabbing some people. I watched maybe 3 or 4 games, and I can't even, you know, I don't study them as much as you do, Kevin, but every single college game now has got like 4 or 5 people they all just picked up from somewhere, and I just wonder what the cost of that is versus the recruitment side. You know, I mean, I just talked to my buddy Bill.
Oh, it's the same recruitment, actually.
Well,
it's just with older people.
Yeah, but you don't see them. They come through the portal. You don't go visit them, do you? Or do you? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I think they do visits, yeah. And of course, they bring them to campus, too.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My lawyer buddy Bill, who's a big Marquette fan, right? Because it's an interesting story. He was recruited to Marquette to play football, and then his sophomore year, they disbanded the team, which is kind of weird. But they did. I don't remember Marquette ever in football.
I remember when Notre Dame disbanded the hockey team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was kind of weird, too. You know, well, then they became a club sport.
Well, it was, because then they brought it back. But
what did they do? Know, what several, did they do to the guys?
Several years later.
What did they do to the guys who were on scholarship? I don't really remember that, do you?
They could stay on scholarship, or they were released to go ahead and transfer someplace without having to sit out a year.
Okay. So now...
That was part of why they did it the way they did it. They actually knocked down to a lower division, and that freed up the players.
Well, my Bill was telling me that the initial thing was they weren't going to do an NIL.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Well, he says, now all of a sudden, in the last few months, he's starting to get letters. Do you want to contribute? And he's like, you know, I don't really want to contribute.
Well, and it's still not supposed to be run by the university, even though they're soliciting for it, because Notre Dame did that, too. And so it's, you know, this whole arm's length facade. I mean, we know the things that are terribly wrong with it, that are structurally wrong with it. And honestly, when, you know, I keep saying, and you've said this, why don't they just get it over with and make them employees of the university? When they do, that's not going to be as good a deal for the players, because once they're employees of the program, they'll be able to start signing them to term contracts. A 2-year contract, a 3-year contract. That'll be the next big thing for negotiating. It won't be the money. It'll be, when can I get out if I want to get out?
Well, we had a...
Of course, they do that in the pros, too. They call it voidable years.
I got a nice big chart in front of me here that I want to get to at some point. Long-run income inequality in India. Kind of looks like the stuff here, but... I've had 2 or 3 discussions with my attorney buddies yesterday. Of course, just because you're an attorney doesn't mean you know different areas, right? And, of course, these guys don't. But just in terms of contract law, Kevin, we're talking about it with Lou yesterday a little bit. I mean, can a parent, if he signs a contract for a kid who's under 18 or 19, whatever the hell it is, I think it's 18, can he encumber his kid once he turns 18? And I think everybody tells me the answer is no. So if somebody who's 17 in high school gets a shoe contract or something, I'm trying to think of, why would I give some kid in high school a bunch of dough? I'm not going to sell sneakers with his name on it, I don't think, unless it's a young LeBron. There aren't too many of those around. So I'm trying to, in some way, I'm trying to buy this kid's future. And since I'm also sponsoring schools, the logic would seem to me that I'm going to direct the kid to a school that I'm also sponsoring. Okay, so this is just me trying to be logical here in a non-logical world. So the kid can't sign a contract at 17, correct? So the old man's got to sign it, or the mom, or somebody. Now,
which is what they do with a letter of intent, by the way.
Okay, so now the kid gets to be 18, and he says, screw wherever in Oregon, I don't want to go to Oregon, I want to go to Michigan, I don't know what Michigan, maybe Michigan and Adidas school, I don't know. Well, Nike is not going to be happy with that. I assume my guys tell me that would just void the contract, but now does he, and probably needs to give a chunk of the money back.
It wasn't a contract in the first place.
If the old man signed it, it was.
It's a contract between the old man and the school, and so the old man can provide personal services for the school, I suppose, but you can't bind the kid for that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right?
Kid can't enter into a contract. And despite the fact that everybody thinks there is no sanity clause, it's called the sanity clause.
Well, so the kid can't enter in the contract, and the old man, he can sign it for the kid. They can take the check. But if the kid decides to go somewhere else, they better get a bunch of the money back. Is what the summary I seem to have heard last night. Do you agree with that?
You remember when we were kids and they used to send us these record club things?
Yeah, I do remember that.
You say I get 6 for 99 cents or something like that, 6 record albums for 99 cents, and then I'm committed to buy one every month after that. And of course, nobody ever bought one every month after that, because they couldn't legally enforce it. That's where they are, Tom. I think they're putting their neck way out on a chopping block. I'd go pull up some of my contract law material, but as far as I'm concerned, the contract is void. If you are outside of the law, or whatever, the contract is just voided. Period. Jervon Dexter on the Bears ran into this. The state of Florida had a law when he signed his NIL deal that, and I can't remember who the other party was, but he signed an NIL deal that gave a long-term right to some of his earnings as in the NFL. And Florida law was specific at the time, saying you can't do that. So Dexter was off the hook. They took to court. They tried to enforce the contract. The court said, can't have illegal. Now, the rest of the contract can survive the one part that's illegal. But if you don't have somebody who has legal standing to be able to sign it in the first place, that you know, is not of legal age, is not of sound mind, whatever it, you know, whatever it is, because it doesn't have to be just this situation, the contract is void.
Well, the I think in most cases, you know, Nike has a bazillion good schools, so it's probably not a problem if they grab a kid in high school. Kid's probably going to go.
It's probably not a problem if they if some of them stray too, because if you have enough critical mass, you just call that part of your loan loss reserve.
Well, when your assistant coaches kind of flip back to that topic, when they show up for a recruiting visit, there was a boy, Tom Shanahan has been on the show forever, but because he moved out to the Western Burbs, but he told me once that some guy was recruiting, was being recruited in Florida or something, because Tommy used to tutor kids down there, and he knew this family, and it's something about the coach walked in and said, if you're not paying the same amount as Saban, don't even come in, or something along those lines. And and this is long before NIL. And I wonder when the assistant coach puts his ass on whatever he's going to get to someplace, somewhere along the line, in the living room, the subject of money has to come up. And he's not supposed to be involved in that, but how can he not be?
Well, if nothing else, he says, here's the contact. And so he'll say, here's who you contact, for our collective. And I'm sure the coach then will reach out to whoever makes those decisions for the collective and say, this guy's worth it, or this guy's only worth X, or whatever. It is a really, really weird construct right now. And I can't envision it lasting just on its own ability to operate, let alone whether it's the right way to do it.
Well, but if it's your kid and I show up and I say, here's the contact, the first thing out of your mouth is going to be, it's just you and me and the bottle of Jack Daniels here. How much are we talking? What are these guys giving kids like my son? The conversation has to go onward. It can't just end there.
Oh, everybody knows the going rate for things. I was at a basketball preview thing last night with one of the Notre Dame assistant coaches and with the writer for the South Bend Tribune. And, you know, there's a going rate. Everybody knows what the going rate is for different things.
What is the going rate for a fifth-year transfer? It's be in the rotation, not a star, or something in basketball. What do you guess?
I would guess it's probably in the $30,000 to $50,000 range.
Plus tuition.
Yeah, plus tuition, plus grad school tuition if you're a graduate.
Okay. When does who knows what the politics of it is, because whoever's in office doesn't even like to touch sports for some reason. By the way, your buddy Karl Marx was wrong, I think. What do you say? Religion was the opiate of the people. I think it's sports.
Sports is religion.
Well, same thing. I'm looking here. I just happened to see this on CNBC today. Talk about changing topics, because we have obviously some very heated political stuff had gone on. People are disappointed. People are happy. I'm one of these guys that says the trends for the last 30 years are very dangerous. It doesn't seem to matter who's in office. They don't really change much. But I'm looking at this thing from long-run income inequality in India. All right, so share of national income in 1960, 21%, 1961, 21% of the income was in the bottom 50% of people, okay? And 41% was in the middle 40, and 37% was in the top 10. All right, flash forward to whatever the hell we are, 2022, which is the latest number. The bottom 50% is down to 15%. The middle, which used to be above the 10, is now down to 27. And the top 10% is now almost 60%. Are we going back to the serfs and the nobles, or is this the stuff revolutions are made of, Kevin? I don't know. You and I maybe won't be around to see it when this happens, but this is not healthy. I think it's everywhere in the world, not just here, not just in India. You know, are people going to be have their thumb on their head for the next three generations, or is somebody going to do something about it that isn't nice?
Let me put it this way: is there anything about the economy? Is there anything about fairness? Isn't the right word, because I don't know that it was ever fair, but. Is there anything about it that it isn't just kind of rigged?
Well, it wasn't in 1980 in India, and it wasn't here in 1980, I don't think. The amount of income to the bottom 50% in 1980 was way higher here than it is now. Not even close.
Yeah, but we're talking about today.
I know. I mean, I'll use the term from Milton Friedman, a stock and flow analysis. If it stays right here, is it a massive, massive problem? Or if it turns around a little bit and comes the other way, probably not. But what if it goes? What if it keeps going like this? What if in 2025 or we're almost there, 2028, the top 10% is like 80%? I mean, where do you have to go to where it's a Molotov cocktail that somebody's ready to light? I mean, I don't know if we're there yet, or what even there is. I'm just saying.
Well, we're clearly not, otherwise we'd be doing it. Although we may have just done a little bit of it in last week, so.
I don't know who knows what individual people voted for and against.
Well, but there's a fair degree of that this is a giant middle finger to an establishment.
Okay, but 4 years ago we did the same thing the other way. I mean, somewhere, someplace, the economic part is a problem, and the extent that who's ever in office tells people that it's not a problem, well, I guess they're going to get thrown out. Now, whether that happens,
so what are we really giving the finger to? So yes, economics is the big part of it. It absolutely is the big part of it, but there's also all this other stuff that goes with it. So that these are the people managing the economy are the same ones that are giving us an impaired president, and everybody's telling us how vibrant he is. That you have, Mayorkas, doing his best. What's the guy? Irwin Mainway Act, telling us the border's secure. Straight faced. Looking into the camera. We start doing gender affirming care for children, i.e., puberty blockers and things like that. We have you're putting biological men on women's sports. You're doing drag queen story hours for kids. You have all kinds of unprosecuted crime. I think we're pushing towards the revolution here. I think we're pushing people towards a more revolutionary mind, because we're doing crazy. I mean, this is all the stuff, that when I say it's a big middle finger, I think 2 years ago, I think Republicans, for the most part, were done with Trump. They had had that red wave that never happened, and a lot of that was because of the candidates that he supported and got on the ballot and got through the primaries only to get their butts kicked. And I think a lot of people were willing to walk away from Trump, but when you see all the stuff I just listed, and I can probably think of five more, when you get to that point, he doesn't seem, by comparison, he doesn't seem so crazy anymore.
Well, if you stick to the wealth numbers, we've got a break here, Kevin, because I know you got to switch over to the other... Some of the stuff regarding like migrants getting money, okay, and I'm not for an open border, that I'm not for any of that stuff. If everybody else didn't feel squeezed, that message wouldn't have been as powerful. But I think that's a fact. I mean, it doesn't matter who gave it.
I think it's a fact to a point, but you got to remember where a lot of that pushback came from. A lot of that came from urban minorities who always feel squeezed. They felt squeezed all along. So it's that part is nothing new.
I think people are, especially in urban areas with the taxes and stuff that are going up in those areas, that people are more squeezed than I've ever seen it in my lifetime, honestly. I mean, I dig through individual stories probably more than most. That's why my view of the news is always different. You have a much incredible more view of the younger people, because you deal with those people all the time. I mean, I think I have a you know, I know all the engineers and all these buildings around here that aren't making all that much dough and are working side jobs on the weekends, and how much schools are, and how when their taxes just went up $400, they're like, where the hell am I going to get it? It's the stress on people is absolutely dramatic.
Yeah, and you know, my cross section is part. Yeah, it is younger people, but it's also, you know, factory workers, warehouse workers, yeah, et cetera. You know.
All right, Ken, we got to break. So you can get to your car. SP futures down 30. NASDAQ futures down 163. So not a good morning here. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. Ricky on the board. SP futures down 31. NASDAQ futures down 168. Individual stocks, not kind of crazy. The individual stocks, not that much. We've got in the Dow, we've got Microsoft down 245, but it's been up. Nike's up 94 cents. Salesforce down $4. Nothing nuts. Meta's down 440, but it's trading 572. So, like I said, no panic here at all, just down a little bit. Over in Asia, the Nikkei is up 107.2%, Hang Seng down 9. Boy, for those guys, that's not much of a day. It's call that flat. Shanghai, however, down another percent and a half, 49.33.30, and higher than when it was in its low, but the bloom seems to be off there in the last couple of days. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 22, flat. FTSE up 3, flat. CAC around down 4, flat. There you go. Bavarian Nordic, 16%. Whatever the hell Bavarian Nordic. I think those guys are shipping lines, I believe, but I'm not positive. Yesterday in the U.S., Dow was down 207, S&P down 36, Nasdaq down 123. So we're down about the same amount here this morning. Maybe a little more in the Nasdaq, a little less than the S&P. Bonds. As Powell came out yesterday and said the Fed is not in a hurry to keep cutting rates, so we got the interest rates up 0.2%, 4.44. The Bund unchanged, 2.35. Japan up 1 basis point, 107. Again, this is not much in real numbers, coming from like 0.89 to 107. For those guys, that's a big move. We'll see how that plays out. Oil down 28 cents. Again, the lower part of this range here, 68.42. Brent down 34 cents, 72.22. Natural gas down 9 cents, 270. Gold down $1.90. Had a little bit of a rally yesterday, but not much. We're 25.71. We're 180 points lower than 2 weeks ago. So, faces worst week in more than 3 years. Silver up 12 cents, 30.69. Copper up 7 cents, 4.15. Foreign exchange, the dollar still, the euro is 105.7. That's been a big move from 111. British pound unchanged at 127. We got Bitcoin up another 1,900, 90,012. Let's just get a fake stack together and I'll bid for it. Ugh. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 49 degrees right now with a high of 53. Clouds yielding to some sun today. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 46 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 72. Pleasant with times of clouds and sun. And tonight will be as well partly cloudy and cool with a low of 48 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Eamon Kennedy from Monroe, 17 minutes. We're looking at 33 minutes. Eamon Eden from Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, another 20 minutes. And lastly, 25 minutes for Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Jazz beat Mavericks 115-113. And today, we got the Bulls playing the Cavaliers in Cleveland at 6:30 p.m. and the Suns playing the Thunder in Oklahoma City at 7 p.m. NFL yesterday, the Eagles beat the Commanders 26-18. And this Sunday, November 17, we have Packers at Bears at 12 p.m. And Cardinals are on bye week. Lastly, the NHL yesterday, Blackhawks lose to Kraken 3-1. Back over to you, Chief.
We have Kevin back?
Yeah, you got me back.
Kevin, we've talked about a million different things. A lot of the concerns I have with the same thing I was talking about, the India thing. We're no longer income driven. We're wealth driven, and our policies on both sides of government. And I'll tell you what, these guys are not going to change that. It's maintaining this wealth bubble. I mean, the last thing Trumpy wants is his real estate holdings to go down. Okay, so we're going to do whatever we can to keep this stuff up, and that I think is somewhat. It's healthy if it's you, but it's not. When the wealth bubble starts to grow a lot faster than the income, I think it's an issue because the wealth bubble can turn around. And I see people like there's a guy who lives in my building, right? A good friend. I was friends with his wife long before he got married, and now they're divorced. Anyway, that's another story. But the dude has, he went to one of the colleges and he had some kind of a degree in, some kind of things where you do light animation or whatever it is, but he's got a good job someplace that he now has to go to work for 3 days, and he's splitting an apartment rent, and I'm giving him a break. Between his student loans, some kind of credit cards that the wife left him with, the dude is no more capable of saying, "Chief, open up an account for me, and I'll give you $200 a week, and when we get up to a certain number, buy me something." He's no more capable of that than a man in the moon, Kevin. And he's an educated kid with a good job. And how many people countrywide do we have like that? Millions?
and we have engineered this systematically all while at the same time, and this is every politician in the world saying, "We're standing up for a strong middle class. We're standing up for the little guys." And all the while, every policy that we have had has been the opposite.
Absolutely. For how many years? 30?
Probably. Have to think back to it. But yeah, and I sort of get, why if I were king right now, I don't want the market to crash either, because that just becomes a or even to subside, because that becomes this new distraction that I have to work around. I don't know how you do it, but let's say you really do want to change things. You really do want to change government. You don't want to, anything else to fall apart, or it's going to undermine your credibility. And without the credibility, then you have no ability to do. So, we're in a funny place. I know our guy Carl, who happens to be on now and is welcome to jump in, is absolutely of a mind that there is no glide path to this. Sooner or later, we're going to have to take our medicine, and it's going to be a really, really heavy dose. And that may be absolutely true, but we can't continue as a vibrant, successful country the way we are. It just won't work.
Well, Kevin, let's pick one little policy. And when I say it's not a little policy, we have this, and COVID did a lot of this. And I'm going to say, at the end of the day,
one of the greatest wealth transfers ever,
without a doubt. No, whenever there's a problem, the right people seem to make out on it. But let's forget that for a second. It's this total economic above the world, above the ground terms. We produced essentially a money bubble that made it into the price level. And even if you can have Powell sitting there with his slack-jawed face talking about how we're going to be 2%, I don't care if it's 1% going forward, the problem doesn't go away. Unless somehow, some way, we have some kind of policies, and I don't think it's tariffs, but we have some kind of policy that over the next 5 years, the inflation rate is 1%, and people's income goes up 3% on average, where everybody can catch up somehow. If I could engineer that with your guys' help, we'd be the new Solomon plus Harry Houdini combo, right? But the other side of the coin is
they would carve out more space on Mount Rushmore.
Yes, and course, we have some people now to think a couple of people up there shouldn't be there, which is another whole story for another show.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's fun. But the so if we were in charge, God, that would be the three-headed monster, you and me and Carl. If we decided, okay, we're actually going to pull back on some of this money, and we're going to sneak 2% out of the money supply. We actually want to deflate a little, like 1 or 2% for the next 2 or 3 years, and throw everybody a bone inflation-wise. And by the way, there are times in this world, if you read a lot of what Milton Friedman said in Money History of the United States, there have been times when deflationary economies have been exceptionally vibrant. Doesn't necessarily mean, for instance, after the Civil War, when the government dragged the greenbacks out of the system and actually pulled money out of the system, it was one of the most vibrant growth times we ever had. One does not necessarily mean the other. Inflation means more money. It doesn't mean more growth. Deflation doesn't necessarily mean less growth. It just means less money. So, but one thing it would do is it probably would yank the stock market down 25-30%. Nobody's willing to do that, because it would just happen. Now, it's probably 25 or 30% way too high. So it's not like it's all that unhealthy, except for the part that, in my opinion, being in the business as long as I have, people lose more money on the way down than they made on the way up, because the margins are always higher at the top, and people lose money on money they borrowed. It's not like everybody now, PTI, for instance. Everybody who owns IBM here, I don't think we have any margin loans, Kevin. If we do, it's a little bit, but we're one of the rarest brokerage firms in that regard. But most firms, somebody wants to buy 1,000 IBM, it's trading 208, they send me a check for, instead of 208,000, they send me a check for 104. We don't have anybody like that, but all these other firms do. Okay, so on the way down, more money is lost. So first of all, you could never get the political stones to do that, since the people with money would be all over you. They'd be out with the long knives. And plus, once you set something like that in motion, how do you know where it ends? So I don't know if you and I would want to necessarily do that tomorrow either. Yet, which brings me back to your point, we're kind of stuck in a bad spot, aren't we?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, and, you know, we clearly, we have a spending problem, so you know, there's a lot of fix to be done in there. And let's just say, for argument's sake, that whatever this endeavor we're going to get out of Musk and Ramaswamy is going to be highly successful, it's still trimming around the edges, because it's not dealing with the big stuff. Unless they're going to find a way to just, you know, take a meat cleaver to healthcare. And maybe that's Bobby Kennedy's job. I don't know.
Well, they're just going to be younger.
Whatever it is, unless you address that, that's the part that's crushing us. We need to get rid of the rest of the BS, the stuff that really the government shouldn't be doing. I'm all for that. But, unless we figure out a better model for healthcare, because right now we are just, it's killing us from a deficit standpoint.
Okay, but it's now right back. No matter what argument we go, you or me or Carl, it spins right around back to political will. Now, who in Congress during this election thing, now maybe some people in the Senate, because a lot of them weren't running, how many of them didn't get a fat check from the pharmaceutical industry? Any?
I agree. And throw on media, too.
Well, yeah.
You know, how When do you ever turn on something on radio or television that isn't sponsored by Pfizer?
That's right.
You know, do you want to lose that money if you're reporting on this? So you're not even going to get media support out of it.
Why do you think these two...
And that's all, you know, that's media across the political spectrum.
Why don't these two guys, without getting into an argument about it, the idea that somebody's got $9 billion of government largesse and has the nerve to say government's inefficient, duh. Anyway, why don't these two, I won't use the term idiots because they're not, why don't they just pull out the Simpson Bowles thing? It's already been done, for God's sake. Nobody wanted to pay attention to anybody then. What makes you think they're going to pay attention to anybody now?
You know, that would be a good start. The question is, what do the numbers look like that underlie that study now? And how, you know, what's the pain level to implement it now compared to then?
You can't.
That would be an interesting analysis. I'm asking the question. I'm not speculating on the answer.
Well, Musk got, not from all from government, but a lot of it from government, $9.2 billion from other people to run his company. We just gave $6.2 billion to the Taiwan semiconductor plant going in Phoenix, a big addition they're putting there and so forth. Obviously, there's some movement, and boy, I don't think either one of us disagree. We've got to get an awful lot, and Carl went through it with Lou last week, and that interview should go out on YouTube if it already hasn't. About how much stuff we really need are sourced other places. But we also have this thing that I've spent my whole life involving. We have these capital markets here. We have the bond markets. Every single time somebody starts up now, you don't have to stick your nose up to behind a government and get a check. Why can't, if this is going to be an incredible business for these people, why can't they go out and borrow the goddamn dough? Why did somebody, the first interview you have is with government? You can't have every single time somebody starts a firm with any chance of success, the first check is from government. That's not our system, Kevin. It isn't.
If these actually it is.
It evidently appears to be. But why can't, if you put the business plan together and you say, boy, by the year 2027 we're gonna be kicking ass and taking names and selling this stuff all over the world. Why can't you go to the bond market or the stock market? Isn't that what it's for?
Well, and one of the things that's an issue with that is everybody who's already in that market is already getting government subsidized. So now, do you realistically expect anybody who wants to enter the market to not ask for the same thing?
Well,
I mean, you got to back off of the other stuff at the same time that you're insisting on. A proper market discipline on the new entrants. And, you know, this is part of that, you know, when we say, do we need a revolution or can we do this with some kind of glide path? I don't know how you do that with a glide path. How do you, you're going to pull the rug out from under everybody else? I'm not saying you shouldn't. We probably should. But that's the kind of thing that's going to take the revolution.
Well, I believe that in regards to, like, electric cars, over time, especially if you have some kind of renewable energy that gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, somebody somewhere living, I'll say, in the suburbs or on a farm is going to have a couple of gas-powered cars or something. But when a doofus like me goes to Myers every morning, of course, I can't go get gas in the electric car, can I? But if I goes to Myers, you know, I'll just hop in the electric car and buzz over to Myers, grab the groceries. What's the difference?
It is never going to work thermodynamically. Stop with the parading of lies, Chief. You know this.
What are you talking about? If I got a windmill on my place and power the thing up and want to drive it one day a week, why doesn't it work?
Because when you look at the entire thermodynamic chain of using this, it fails. It fails every single time. And it is not, the laws of thermodynamics are not suggestions. You can't do anything about them. And
you're
everybody,
electric, no place on earth is electric power going to be worthwhile.
No place on, I didn't say no place on earth. Electric power is obviously worthwhile. We have lights that run on it, and along with a bunch of other stuff. But in terms of using it for motive power to run a vehicle, no, never, period.
We used it in electric locomotives during the 40s and 50s, and it worked fine.
We use diesel electric locomotives today, and they work quote unquote fine. And the reason is torque matching, and we give up the thermodynamic efficiency because for a locomotive, the torque matching is the more important element.
We also have electric cars that I see in a lot of places, and they, I think, are pretty darn efficient.
No, they're actually not. The gas-powered vehicle wins.
All right.
It's a mathematics problem.
My point was, and before you started arguing, before you even knew where I was going, my point was we should have let the market decide when it was time and what people decided they want an electric car and when they didn't. We shouldn't have given Musk $9 billion or anybody else.
You're right on that.
Yeah, that's where I was going. But we did.
But the reason we gave Musk $9 billion wasn't because we just wanted to give Musk $9 billion. It was because we sold the American public, and a bunch of screaming idiots were the ones doing it, including Greta Thunberg, who has the intellectual capacity of a literal fly at the time that she started it, because she was prodded into doing it, just like all these so-called kids that are trans are prodded by watching Twitter videos and whatever, and Snapchats. And by the way, none of them have actually sat down and done the arithmetic. And I have. I've written multiple posts on this.
I think that on the edges, in some areas where renewable energy is right in front of you, for instance, the Southwest U.S., and I drove across there through relentless winds and sun. If you can't find a place to put a windmill or a solar collector out there, something's wrong with you.
That's not the problem. The problem is you need the flywheels. Otherwise, as soon as there is a cloud that comes across there, I know it doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, the grid collapses. And so you have to have the flywheel effects, and you have to have the backup. And as soon as you do that, and you have to add that into the system in order for it to be stable, once you do that, the math never works.
I think in some areas, for instance, in Chicago, because we had so much, we don't need more, nuclear power, the idea of running stuff with electric at night was terrific because you had so much energy to do it.
But nuclear power is not a renewable
energy. What I'm saying is, there's always stuff at the edges that if you do something right, somebody somewhere, even if you got a farm and a windmill, you can drive the Sunday church in the pickup truck that's electric. There's somebody can make. My point is the market should make these decisions. I'm trying to agree with you. You're making it very difficult.
No, the point is this, if the market made these decisions, it would not accept in very limited special circumstances. For example, I can put solar panels on the roof of my RV, and that means that when I am out in the middle of BF nowhere, I don't have to haul the generator out of the back of the truck and start it and burn up gasoline. Okay, now, the problem is that how often am I out in the middle of BF nowhere where I don't have a cord available? In other words, there's no socket at an RV park or whatever, right, that I can plug into. If I am living in my vehicle and I'm doing it out where it's sunny most of the time and I need the limited amount of power that I can get from using those panels and we go down a list of like 15 different ands, it makes a lot of sense for me to put those things on there, all right, and have the battery storage behind it and the inverter and everything else. Yes, absolutely, in those circumstances. However, there's not a significant market for those circumstances because there's too many ands that have to stack for it to work. You know, you say, well, how about the guy that, you know, that lives in a city and he never really goes anywhere except to the grocery store, and, you know, and the EV makes sense for him to go to the grocery store, right? Because he doesn't care about the fact that it only has a 200-mile range. By the way, that's a 100-mile non-return range, all right?
Well, I get it. Plus, if you can't help it, if you got the air conditioning on, it's hot, or you get the windshield.
It's in the winter and it's cold, right? Because cold kills people as opposed to hot being uncomfortable most of the time.
But see, I remember that. You don't, because the My buddies used to have Volkswagen Beetles. I try heating those things in the winter without a radiator.
Oh, Chief, I had 460 air conditioning for the first several years of my driving life. You know what 460 air conditioning is, right?
Roll down the window.
Four windows down at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah. Absolutely. My brother has a roll down.
That's back in the days when air conditioning was an option.
My bro has a little pick-me-up. He just rides in a train and back. And with roll-down windows, they were playing Sunday morning softball, and all of a sudden some guy takes his three kids over to look at the roll-down windows. They'd never seen them before.
Yeah, it wasn't that. Well, I mean, the first several cars I had hand cranks.
I wouldn't mind having them right now. I don't bother. It doesn't bother me. The only problem is if the knucklehead next to you doesn't pull his window up, you got to lean over and do it.
Yeah, well, it is what it is, right? But
I want to jump back in on the subsidies too, because it's one thing to subsidize, but also when you put down a mandate saying X percent by 2030. Must be electric car sales,
right.
And whether you're doing it in the state of California or you're doing it with the federal government, that's every bit the subsidy that the cash is, because it's just forcing the market into over to certain producers. Now GM and Ford have their electronic vehicles, so it's pushing a certain amount of the market to them. But then if you're like Tesla and that's what you make, then thank you government. You just did my marketing plan for me.
Look, Chief, if we do not start throwing people in prison on the first on January 21st, or even better, January 20th at 12:02, all right,
we're not gonna do that, because half the people that are stealing the money are Republicans.
Well, you know what, here's
they're only Democrats steal the money? Really?
Oh no, but look. Last month, the MTS came out just a couple, it was for October. Remember, we've been talking about the fact that Biden and Harris threw $500 billion into the system in an attempt to buy the election as soon as the fiscal year closed? Remember me pointing this out?
Yeah.
We didn't know exactly where it went. Well, now we do know exactly where it went, because, that's a check register, right? So here we are. The payments, now this is against last October, so, Halloween comes the same day every month, every year, right? Last October, the payments, the benefit payments for the supplemental Medicare side, which is doctors, okay, that's what that is in the CMS trust fund. 243% of last year's amount, last October's, and hospital payouts were 209%. The total in CMS was over 50% higher. Those two line items were more than doubles. And you want to know where the problem is and why we can't? We're on an unsustainable glide path, with our debt, says Powell. No, we're not on an unsustainable glide path. We are about to have a nuclear-style detonation in the federal budget and the fiscal world. And if you don't see the warning in the bond market steepening and coming out of that negative tilt, which, by the way, started happening the day Powell cut rates by 50 basis points and is still going up, and is the exact opposite of the situation that you had in that curve when Trump took office in 2016. Everybody bought the market because they saw that 25-ish% return the first year of Trump's first term, and somehow believes that with this kind of crap going on, they're going to get it again. No, they're not. Everybody involved in this garbage goes to prison on day one, and it has to happen, because if it doesn't, when you get 1 year into Trump's term, then you start with all of the Congress people, all 535 of them, are now running for the midterm elections, right?
Well, Kevin's here. I want to ask a couple quick questions. One is the debt somehow has been being covered by people. I was looking yesterday on the show, if you guys were hearing, but I went through, China is continuing to drop down. This is part of what you know, no man can do one thing, right? I mean, if the group in office, and by the way, Biden didn't exactly let up on China that much. I mean, everybody thinks he went back to buddies when they really didn't. I mean, I don't know all the details, but I'm not so sure all the tariffs got erased and everything, no matter what. But if we basically put our thumb on these guys and they don't attack us or whatever, or attack somebody, and all of a sudden, a year from now, there are another 100 billion or 200 billion less of these auctions, that's not so hot. I mean, it's like everything we try and do here. If I'm the new Speaker of the House, well, he's not new, and the Republican head of the Senate, and I come on combined TV and say, you know, I'm listening to this guy, Carl, and he's pretty damn right. We've got to do something about this medicine stuff and about hospitals and about this part of the cost of the people, which is way worse, I think, than what's going on in Washington. I'm with you, Carl. I'm agreeing with you here. Now, so our recommendation is for the next 2 years, nobody takes a check from any of the pharmacies, hospitals, or anything like that. How big of a fart in church do you think that is?
Well, yeah. But you know
it's what?
It's what
you used to call a butt ripper.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It, by the way, you need new underwear because that was wet.
Yeah.
But the other thing that goes along with that, though, is, you know, everyone thinks that this is just, that there's like there's this low level of noise because they don't see they don't see exactly how bad this corruption is. I mean, the data is what it is, okay? It has to be 100 times worse than you can possibly imagine, because if it wasn't, the numbers wouldn't be this bad, right? I mean, that's just the way the math works out. So, but I can tell you how some of this works because I get little snippets of the internals, all right? There are people in the medical, in the pharmaceutical side of things that are on one day getting $5,000 for $10 worth of what amounts to a vitamin.
Yeah.
Okay. And the next day, that same program says you can't do that. Now, the problem that comes with this is the guy who's running, Walgreens, large, or CVS, large, conglomerate kind of thing. Some of these things get absorbed, some of them don't. But think about what happens if you're buying something from distribution that costs $10 and you're getting paid $5,000 for it by some government program. Boy, do you buy as much of it as you can get your hands on for $10 when that's happening, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and then all of a sudden they turn around and they say, oh, no, you can't do that anymore. Now you have something that has a shelf life, has an expiration date, after which it cannot be sold. It has to be thrown out because it's a regulated product. And you got a warehouse full of this crap. All right? And, this is the kind of crazy that goes on. And I saw some of this when I was running my company. We had insurance, health insurance companies that would screw around with the formulary and try to screw one of my employees. And twice, I had to get, I'd actually have an employee sign a waiver because legally, I'm not entitled to any of that information about someone's personal health status. Okay, I mean, I HIPAA says I cannot touch that stuff. So I had to have them, I had to have the lawyers draw up a document so that I can have access to it.
So what if you had a business and you said, when you go to the doctor, just give me the bill, I'll pay it?
Well, okay, Chief, the entire problem is this. If the way you stop this, and it's very simple, is everyone pays the same price for the same product or service, same good or service, period, end of conversation, and nobody can get in the middle on the payment side. Now, what you get reimbursed after the fact, that could be different, obviously. But if I want to have, if the price of having my appendix out is $5,000, it's $5,000.
Why?
It doesn't matter.
Well, why, Kevin, you still with us?
Yeah.
Let's expand this a little bit while you're still here. Why isn't college the same way? I mean, economically,
well, it should be.
There's no difference. I mean, Notre Dame should
college
be.
College is selectively subsidized.
Right. Well,
no, it's forcibly subsidized. And then I may be paying the tuition. If I'm sitting in calculus class, the black kid next to me, I may have bought his tuition for that class.
Well, I mean, you may or may not have, but...
Well, but I was forced to do it because I can't... we're not all charged the same price.
Well, as I'm saying, it is, the two industries you're talking about, I mean, economically, they're the same in the sense that hopefully I don't walk into Dunkin' Donuts and say, how much is coffee? And the next question is, how much you got?
Oh, no, no. You put the nozzle, the gas nozzle in your car, and the first question the pump asks is, who's your car insurance company?
Yeah, I mean, so the idea, I mean, and I don't know, but here's kind of, unfortunately, it's my issue with this stuff. The three of us are not 25 or 30. Now, poor Ricky, he's never seen it any other way. What are we...
I did.
I know, but what are these three idiots, us, talking about that colleges shouldn't give scholarships? Well, it should be, how much is the college? $20,000. Okay, if I don't have the $20,000, if I got parents, if I think it's a worthwhile investment, just like the factory where Kevin and I were talking about, it was worth it. I should be able to go to a bank and say, I need a college loan, and it's a 6-year loan. Give me the rate. How much? And I need to borrow $5,000 a year. That should be on me or somebody else. It should compete for that.
I have no objection to student loans. I just don't want them from the government and available to everybody. It should be based on your ability to pay. So if you want to a student loan so that you can major in gender studies, I ain't giving you a loan for that because you're not going to be able to pay me back. On the other hand, if you want to major in accounting, you probably will be able to pay me back.
Well, I don't have a problem with the government ponying up.
The government just gives it to you. You know, they would consider it discriminatory to do what I just described.
Well, I mean, but even that, what you just said is sort of discriminatory. Well,
and it is discrimination. They would consider it a bad discrimination. Discrimination is a neutral word in and of itself.
My point is, it should be whatever it is. It ought to be what's the term for that? It's in the antitrust, Carl. It's vertical integration, right?
Well,
the same person who you buy the car from should not be the guy who finances it.
Well, vertical and there's two analyses. Horizontal integration is typically considered per se illegal, and all of what goes on in the medical and pharmaceutical world falls under this. This has been ruled on at the Supreme Court. Right. This is not a novel idea.
The Supreme
idea.
Court writes a thing and then they go off for break. They don't care if it gets enforced.
Chief, I understand that. Okay, but look, this was decided in the late 1970s and early 1980s. Two cases, Royal Drug and Maricopa County. I've written on them a dozen times. I shoved them in Matt Gaetz's face at a Destin town hall full of seniors when he was bleeding on about how he was going to, you know, as a representative of Congress and their representative, he was going to make sure that their health care was protected and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I stuck my hand up in the back of the room and said, excuse me, sir, this conduct that is causing this problem has been illegal for over 100 years, and it's been tested twice at the Supreme Court and ruled unlawful. Where are the indictments? And he comes back, oh, no, there's no such, you know, there's McCarran-Ferguson that says that insurance companies, oh, no, I'm sorry, that's been tried at the Supreme Court. Well, he's like, well, you know, so after this thing's over, basically he calls me a liar. After this thing's over, he comes back and he says, well, you know, which cases are you talking about? And I gave him the two cases. He took my business card and said, I'll get back to you on that. Well, of course.
Oh, he's never going to.
And of course, he never did. Now, Trump wants him to be the attorney general.
He lit a very nice cigar with that business card.
Well, I suspect that he might have used it somewhere first, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he's, you know, a Clintonite.
Well, but, you know, but even the simple stuff. This is, for me, it's the, well, I don't know why I like talking about economic. I mean, Ricky, how many times in your life, well, not that many in the last 6 years or 6 months, where they're going to go in, Jeep or Ford is giving you 0% financing for 5 years. Okay, now in my mind, it's patently illegal. Absolutely illegal. Because it's they're stringing their finance arm with the other thing. Now, when I was young, there was a time, when they did something like that, they would say, we'll either give you 0% financing or a $500 rebate, which matches the two up. So if they were going to charge you, the cars were, you know, $4,000 in those days, if they were going to charge you 0%, you could take the $500 and walk over to Lakeside.
And pay cash.
No, right. You could pay cash. Or you could walk over to Lakeside and say, what's your rate? Right. And they'll say, my rate's 5%. By the way, the 500 covers it.
You know? Right. Well, that was, you know, after 9/11, when you know, Bush stuck all that so-called stimulus into the economy, and everybody was doing the 0% 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I needed a truck at the time, and it's still sitting in my driveway. Well, they let 3 years, 0% interest, but they wouldn't give me the cash difference if I just paid for the truck. Well, I had the money.
That's what I'm saying. That is.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you bought it for your business, it was accelerated depreciation. So, you could get some tax break on it.
Well, Kevin, I needed it to haul my boat to the ramp. So, you know, I don't think that could count that as.
We needed to incorporate you. We needed some good tax advice.
I had an LLC, Kevin, but I wasn't willing to shave the corners like a lot of people do.
Let the record reflect an awful lot of traders that I know took advantage of that, and all of a sudden we're in trucks and SUVs.
Yeah, and they bought them for their businesses. Yeah. Yep, I know they did. Hey guys, I got to go, so have a good rest. I'll listen to the recording.
What do you think tomorrow? Big win or no?
A double win for the Irish. They're going to get they got basketball on NBC followed by football on NBC. So they'll beat Georgetown. They'll beat Virginia.
All right, bud. So, Carl, but how does this, just as time goes by, nobody even remembers the right way to do it?
Oh, because there's so, here's, you know, it's like I was just talking about, you've got these pharmacies that, you know, take a $10 drug, you know, $10 for a month's supply or whatever, and, Medicaid will, Medicaid's a split program, right? So it changes from state to state too, because states are involved. And so does private insurance. It's, you know, that's a state by state thing as well. And so this month they'll pay $1,000 for that prescription, and next month, $10, and we'll give you $3 to dispense it. So you'll give me $13, and the thing is, this kind of grift, and if you're deft at negotiating these scams and figuring out exactly where they are and how you can make how you can get your bank off of them, the amount of money you can make is unbelievable. All right, I mean it's off the rack how rich you can get doing this. The problem, of course, is that this is just like placing levered bets in the markets, right? Getting in the futures where you have 20-to-1 leverage inherently there. And you're all in on, with all your buying power, and then it goes the wrong way on you. And oops. So,
I have a question for you. You might know the answers. It has to do with, like, patent law. And the reason why I always use this as an example is the Viagra.
Right.
Cialis Levitra. And the reason why I use that is because everybody, I think, if you thought about it for a second, it's not like you should be thinking about this stuff, but anybody, if you thought about it for a second, you would realize that there were an awful lot of Viagra. Well, the one wasn't on there, the Weekender Cialis, right? Whatever. But I think it was and they both went off patent at the same time and immediately dropped off CNBC and dropped off
right
NFL, because they were. What, 45 million a year to the NFL or some number?
Oh, and it was, and you know what? It was every second ad.
Yeah,
right.
But the only reason why I like the ads is because the one lady with the suitcases that had to cost $100,000. I mean, where did she get the suitcase? Anyway, but those patents supposed to be 17 years. All right, now both of those companies, I don't know who makes what, both of those companies managed to get that extended to 19 years through some quirk or something or other, where they had to go and go to court or someplace.
Oh no, there's. I'll tell you the most egregious. Okay, go ahead, finish.
My question is,
example.
If wherever they're going, if it's court or to the patent, I don't know if it's when you go to the patent office, someplace somewhere, there's some wrinkle that they feel they were screwed by only getting 17 years instead of 19, and both of them ended up getting the extra 2 years. All right,
right,
which is
right.
Kind of a long time. My question is, who argues against that? Does the government, does the insurance companies, or does anybody?
Well, that's a good question, because you know adversarial process requires that there be two people on opposite sides of the table, right?
But is it an application to the patent department? Is it a court thing? I don't even know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, it's like anything else. If there's no opposition, you tend to win, don't you?
So you would file with the patent office and say somehow you were aggrieved during your 17 years, and somehow it should be 19, and somebody says okay, it's not, or does it go to court?
Well, it probably does go to court, but the patent office would be the other side of the argument. They'd be the people representing the other side. But
how hard are they going to try?
Well, like I said, how vigorously are they going to? You know, that's always a problem. I'll tell you what the most egregious example of this, and it happens all the time, but it goes back, oh God, at this point, like 30 years, when the original Montreal protocols came out. Remember, that was the thing with refrigerants. That was the ozone hole that was supposedly being destroyed by R22 and R12 and all this. Okay.
R22 is freon, right?
Well, they're all freon. They're all chlorinated compounds, okay?
All right, but there's differences in the freons. Freon is just not one thing.
Correct. But the reason that we use these is that the physical properties, when they boil, when they condense, the temperature ranges where those happen tends to, you know, are in the right place for what you're trying to do, i.e. air conditioning in a house, okay? Because you have to have that pressure gradient where that occurs has to be in the right place, otherwise it's worthless. And the other thing is, they have to be non-toxic, because you don't want to poison everybody in the house if there's a leak, right? Or in your car. That would be bad. Well, yeah, that would be
bad. As soon as you're dumb, I got a $1 million question for you. As soon as you're dumb.
Well, so here's the thing. The reason we use them is because chlorinated and fluorinated, which is why they're called fluorocarbons, okay, those chlorine and fluorine are extremely active elements. So when they are bound to something, they are very unlikely to break those bonds. And because the bonds are not open, they're not biologically active with something else when they're bound this way. Now, chlorine by itself, of course, is used as a sanitizer and things. And that's the reason it works, is because it has open bonds and it can destroy things.
Chlorine, for those who don't know, is bleach.
It's bleach, or it's used in your pool or a hot tub or whatever. But the reason it works is that it has open bonds. Now, when you combine it with something else, that bond is closed. It's already been bound. And that's what makes it usable and safe in this kind of an application. So virtually every kid who has asthma, and every person who has asthma, walks around with a rescue inhaler in their pocket. Because if you have an attack and you don't have one of those and your airway turns into, you know, the size of a smaller than a drinking straw, you're going to die. So these are fast-acting bronchial dilators, and the most common one that everyone knows about is called albuterol. And you have to have a propellant. You have to have something to propel that stuff into your lungs when you take a hit off this thing. Well, what they used were these fluorocarbons, the same ones that are refrigerants.
They're in shaving cream. They're in
right. Well,
air horns, you name it.
Yeah, but they used the same ones that were in there. So when the Montreal Protocol debate started up about these things being so dangerous to the ozone hole, the drug companies actually lobbied for them to be banned. Now, they were a fraction of 1% of the total emission, even though obviously every time you use an inhaler, you intentionally expel that stuff into the atmosphere, right? After when you exhale. But the total emissions into the environment were a fraction of 1% from this drug use. The drug companies lobbied for it to be banned. And the reason, and then when it was banned, they went back and got a new patent on the different version, which was the same drug with a different inert propellant. So your kid's inhaler went from being $3 to $50.
That does not surprise me.
Well, this
look what happened to the EpiPen. A new cap.
Chief, this is the kind of crap that goes on all throughout the system. It's been going on for decades. It's not a new problem. This thing with the inhalers was
start with telephones. Start with a Brownie camera that Kodak stole and stole it from Brownie. I mean, how far do you want to go?
But you know, in the medical system, which we're talking, you know, which is where what I've said is, if you take, I wrote a very detailed post, and it was a slightly less detailed version was in my book, which I had to dumb down some because Wiley said that there was that too much of it was over the heads of the average reader, and therefore, you know, I mean, you're appealing to a market that's going to buy something, right?
Right.
But I expanded on it and did several blog posts on it, and there's two that are connected together, the actual plan itself, and then the second one would be what would happen implementation-wise if you did this. And they've been up there since then. Both of them are, I think 2014 was when they were originally published. They're still available. And if you did this, if you went through the system and you decoupled this, you just decouple, everyone pays the same price, and you decouple the payment from you from any sort of so-called insurance. So basically, you have the system that existed when I was a kid. I was sick. My mom takes me to the doctor. Doctor sees me, whatever the situation is. Mom goes up to the counter and writes a check. And it's for, you know, $20 or $25 or whatever it is for the doctor to see me. Then that bill that she gets from the doctor, and everybody that comes in there and has a similar complaint gets a bill and pays $25. Now,
way too simple.
Now you have the bill in your hand, and you submit that into the insurance company, and the insurance company says, "Well, we'll pay 20." Okay, so guess what? You ate $5, and you know, the insurance company paid you back the 20. Now, the next time you need to go to the doctor, you know, because now you call the doctor up and you say, "Well, you know what? Will you take 20 instead of 25?" And the doc says, "Well, you know, I got to charge everybody the same price, and it's 25. So you call the next office over, and he's 5 miles further away. And he says, "Yeah, we'll see you. You know, we see people for $20.
But you better be quick about it.
Well, you know what? Now, there are times, of course, there are times when this doesn't work, like you're having a heart attack, right?
Yeah.
So there is a section in that entire thing about how do you deal with two problems? Number one is, I'm having a heart attack. I just got in a car accident. You know, having a stroke. You know, there's 100 things that go on when you can't sit there and you know, dial for dollars and figure out who's got the, you know, today we all do it on the internet, right? You go on Amazon, you go on Walmart.com, you comparison shop. Well, there's obviously medicine. There's time cannot do that because the situation is emergent and requires immediate assistance. And then the second one is for people who are Americans. You know, we have this law called EMTALA, which Reagan put into place because there were a couple of instances. This was like three or four. It's like the same sort of thing that drives the whole reason student loans became non-dischargeable is there was a handful of people who went and got their doctor's licenses and then selectively defaulted on the loans on purpose. The same kind of thing that commercial developers.
Yeah, three guys that came out of one medical school and like did it together, didn't they, or something?
Yeah, it's the same, you know, this kind of strategic default, though, is the same thing that commercial property developers do every effing day.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay for them, though. It's okay for Trump.
Well, it's okay for Trump to do it, but when these three doctors do it, all of a sudden we have to make federal law so they can chase your Social Security payments, right? So you have to get rid of that crap, both in the educational system. Student loan debt should be dischargeable just like anything else, and the federal government should be completely out of it. If the college is dumb enough to write a loan, or a bank is dumb enough to write a loan for a degree that it doesn't pay enough for you to be able to cover it, they ought to
eat it. They shouldn't be giving somebody a loan if the colleges were competitive in the number. Did you ever go buy a I didn't, because I kind of knew about it. Did you ever buy a car when Western Avenue on the south side was car row, used car row, one after another?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you went in there and you wanted to buy a car for $1,000, which you could buy in those days, they're going to want $300 down, and they'll spot you the $7. In virtually every case, what the guy paid for the car was less than what you gave him in cash. So the loan, if you paid it, was gravy. If you didn't, sort of okay, too. If they're not okay, they come repossess it and do it all over again.
I was going to say, they come take the car back, then they sell it to another
schlub. They do it all over again. So, I mean, if you go to, I keep using my school, if you go to Notre Dame and they say, okay, the tuition's $75 all in, and they give you a loan for God knows what, say you pay $25. All right, and they give you a loan for $50. I'm going to say they're more than covered on the $25. They're just like the used car loan.
Yeah, the thing is that if the two places that this has to be done, are there in the educational side and all, but the one that is going to blow up the world like now is the medical stuff.
Yeah,
and if we don't fix it now,
but they are the biggest contributors.
Chief, yeah. I know. That's where the number one lobbying is, right? Is right there. And
you guys, you have a lot of company. You guys that are looking for, like, term limits as a solution to crap like this.
Doesn't solve anything.
Doesn't solve anything. I mean,
two
things. If everybody in Congress would probably be grandfathered in, so it'll take you 25 years to weed your way through it. And the second thing is, When that was a thought, I was reading some stuff in Illinois. Somebody wrote a pretty good article regarding how the drug companies are identifying people at a younger age that are like the up and comers in the state legislature in Illinois, with the idea that they probably have a pretty good chance of becoming a U.S. rep or something someday. So they're giving them money earlier on.
Right.
All you do is make the thing. Here's a question for you. I mean, sort of like elections, people have their principles and whatever the hell they are. But I'm going to say that if you and I, and he died not that long ago, professor at Notre Dame, who taught us about patent law, Father Fitzgerald. God, the guy made it to like 108 or something. If you walked into a, you would never go into a bar. So we went into a coffee shop. We'd engage.
What?
We'd be in coffee shops. Neither one of us ever goes to a bar.
If we
engage normal Americans, and we were to say something like, you know, I'm running for president, and the first thing I'm going to do is get rid of patent laws. This would be like you stuck a shiver where the sun don't shine, because what do you mean? That's America. Two guys, Carl and Chief, go into a garage. They make a wood lathe like nobody ever made it before. They get to own this for 17 years. That's America. What's the matter with you two idiots? Assuming you came with me, you guys are so screwed. The question is, yet if you look at the history of patent laws since the day that they started, and the people that inventory the patents, and every time you send in a patent, somebody looks at it, finds something they think is similar and challenges it. If you look at the history of patents, I'm going to say that law has caused more harm than good from day one.
Well, you know, that it goes back to the patent thing. The Patent Trademark Office and the authority for it is actually in the Constitution. Goes all the way back to the founding of the country. And the premise behind it is, I believe, is a good one and entirely valid.
So do I, but it's never worked. It has worked. I mean,
It has.
There's people. Remember, one of my buddies in high school. Remember the dome light?
Yeah.
The old cars.
Yeah.
The cover on the thing had a number on it. It was his uncle's patent. He got like a buck for every car they made for the dome light.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, my aunt when I was growing up, lived next door to another Pritzker that was the inventor of the sunroof. Needless to say, he had a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, okay. What I'm saying is you start from the beginning. And we had I don't know if you were on when John was. We had Katie on a couple times. Katie is a young lady who was working in medical research. And I said, okay, Chief and Carl, one morning in their joint account, they decide to sell a whole bunch of spoos, and the world comes to an end, and they make $90 bazillion on their short spoo sale. And we give $50 million to XYZ hospital to research some disease. And all [S2] Right. [S1] Of a sudden, there's a breakthrough in the some disease. Now, the hospital's charged basically a bleep load of overhead for against our money we gave them. We got all these people in there working on this. Someday they find something, and magically Pfizer has the patent. What about us? What about the people that worked on it? What about the hospital?
Right.
I mean, Pfizer's, it's my patent. How did you get, when did you show up? The money went here 5 years ago, and you showed up 2 weeks ago. How the hell is it your patent?
You know? Well, there's, we have this magical thinking that goes on in the world today, which is really dangerous. And it's how we got into this mess that we have now with the COVID shots. There's the data, you know, we just had an election, right? And there are a bunch of conspiracy claims out there that say that, well, the reason that Trump won is because in 2020 he actually won. And Biden, you know, 8 million of those votes were not real, or 7 million of those votes were not real, or however many million. You know,
that's such crap.
Well, okay. Now, hold on a minute. There's a set of data that's out of a Washington state county that just showed up. Well, that particular county is 98% of the population has received at least two shots. Okay. So in other words, they all drank the Kool-Aid out there, and probably.
Well, you were forced to. You couldn't go to work in some places.
Well, I was going to say in a lot of places, yeah. Probably because you were going to be fired if you didn't, right? And then you were going to lose your house.
Then the police and fire and all those people had to do it too, and half of them already had it before. It's even crazier.
Okay. Almost 9% of those people are dead.
That's not good. Why don't we ponder that while we go to break? I was going to ask you, how the hell are we ever going to figure that out? S&P futures down, or do we want to? S&P futures down 33, NASDAQ futures 191. So NASDAQ's going lower here. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. Hey, Carl, I'm digging through all these numbers. Do me a favor and look at the retail sales report. It looks like it's kind of a clunker here. Why don't you take a quick look while I'm going through this stuff? And I also wanted to talk to you about those numbers in India when I was talking about with Kevin earlier. S&P futures down 35 now, and NASDAQ futures down 200. So nobody likes the 0.1 versus 0.3 estimated retail sales number. Dow's down 155. So individual stocks. I got Caterpillar down a buck. Nothing crazy here. Microsoft down 3. Salesforce down 4. That's enough for the Dow to move it down 150. Asia. Nikkei up 107.3%, Hang Seng down 9. Shanghai, however, down pretty heavy, down 49, it's 1.5%. Over in Europe, these guys were almost all flat, now they're all down. DAX down 61.3%, well, FTSE's down $5, let's call that flat. CAC Ron was flat, but now it's down 27.4%, so they're moving lower over there as well. Yesterday, Dow was down 12.7, S&P down 36, NASDAQ down 123. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.46. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.35.
Japan down 1 basis point. Big move here, 107.5, up from like 89 a few weeks ago. So, again, it doesn't sound like much compared to the rest of the world, but percentage-wise, it's a big move. Oil down 20 cents, 68.50, right back down to the low end of this range. Brent down 24 cents, 72.32. Natural gas down 7, 270. RBOB unchanged, 198. Hopefully, I'll be able to get gas this week again under $3. Gold up 6.30, 25.79, but that's way below the 27.50 it was a couple weeks ago. Silver up 22 cents, 30.79. Silver hasn't gotten bashed as much as gold has, so we'll see if it rallies back up. Copper up 3 cents, 412. FX, the dollar, British pound is actually up a little bit today, to about 105.6. That's been decimated. The dollar's been very, very strong. I'm sorry, that's the euro, 105.6. The British pound is unchanged at 126. They've gone down, but not as much as the euro. And we have crypto up $1,600, 89,710. I guess that's our savior, a fake stock. You don't even get the tulip. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 49 degrees right now with a high of 53. Clouds yielding to some sun. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 46 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees with a high of 72. Pleasant with times of clouds and sun. And like Chicago, will be partly cloudy tonight and cool with a low of 48 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 30 minutes. We're looking at 45 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 33 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 25 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is another 30 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Jazz beat the Mavericks, 115 to 113. Today, we got the Bulls playing the Cavaliers in Cleveland at 6:30 p.m. And the Suns playing the Thunder in Oklahoma City at 7 p.m. NFL, yesterday, the Eagles beat the Commanders 26 to 18. And this Sunday, November 17, we got Packers at Bears at 12 p.m. and Cardinals on bye week. Lastly, NHL, the Blackhawks lose to Kraken 3-1 yesterday. Back over to you, Chief.
What a horrible name that is. By the way, did you, what's the line in a Bulls game? The Cleveland's undefeated, aren't they? And the Bulls are
awful. Oh, the hell with the Bulls game. Let's have the line on the fight tonight.
Oh, you know what? One of my buddies last night was all over this fight. For those that don't realize, Mike Tyson is, what's he, 90? Is he's fighting some guy who's 25?
He's fighting a guy half his age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, if it wasn't Tyson, it would be worth zero, right, in terms of any kind of expectation. He's going to get knocked out in two rounds.
They're 2-minute rounds. They're not three.
The other thing is they shorten the rounds up. They're normally like 3.5.
Not at three.
Yeah, okay. But they took like 50% off the round time.
Well, it took 1 minute off the...
Well, that's 50%.
No.
3-2.
Well, it's 30, right, 33 on the way down, 50 on the way up.
Yeah, I got you. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, But I mean, if it wasn't Tyson, if it wasn't him as the old guy, everyone would be like, oh, yeah, this is just a money grab from whoever it is on the other side of the table, right?
I'm surprised he's not fighting George Foreman. What's George like? He's 75 or something like that?
It's going to be interesting because I don't know if you saw that, like, the meet and greet. There was a video clip of it last night that was up. You know, they always do the traditional thing. The two guys, stand next to each other.
Stare at each other, yeah.
Right. Well, apparently, Mr. Challenger either deliberately or accidentally stepped on the front of Tyson's shoe. and Tyson slapped him hard in the face. Okay, open hand, but he hit him. And the thing that was interesting about it was if you watch it in slow motion, normally what everybody tells you when it comes to fights is you watch the shoulders because that's where the punch comes from, right? Yeah, except his hand moved first. So, and I mean, it was an instinctual kind of thing when he hit him. And I'm like, you know, and this guy, he never saw it coming. You could tell by just the fact that there was just no recognition that he was about to get hit. If that's how it plays out tonight, this is going to be real interesting.
Well, is my...
Because that's how you get your bell rung, is if you don't see it coming, okay?
Well, my uncle was a huge man, and, he didn't mess with him. But he say, you know, as I got older, I could still hit as hard, but boy, when I get hit, it hurts.
Oh yeah,
There's kind of a, I think I dabbled around in boxing just a little bit. I mean, dabbled because I was not very good, and the just the conditioning. I don't think there is a sport anywhere that takes the conditioning boxing does. I don't think there's one even close. Maybe wrestling. But it's remember when Ed Too Tall Jones, he was a defensive end on the Cowboys, wanted to become a professional boxer, and Angelo Dundee said he would be 2 years conditioning before he's capable of being a boxer.
Oh yeah, no, it's
and the guy was an elite athlete to start with.
Oh yeah, no, it's a whole different, well, because it's basically whole body, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not it, and the cardio aspect of it is utterly enormous. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, it's just strength, you know, you just get, you know, big chest, big arms,
yeah,
because that's where all the power comes from. Well, that may be where all the power comes from, but the pump comes from inside, right?
Well, it's pretty much all legs, if you do it right. But I mean, even when I was taking boxing at Notre Dame, and the guy goes, okay. Holds out a glove and he says, "Give me 50 jabs." Not even like nobody there. Well, after about 30, your arm didn't want to make it there.
Well, the other thing is, here's the other thing that's interesting. They, so I guess like the standard boxing glove is a 10-ounce glove.
I think some use 8, which is like nothing.
Well, but they're, if I remember reading it correctly, they're 14 for this fight.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, if you and I were kidding around, okay, and we were younger, we would put 16s on.
Right.
Because they're like pillows.
Well, yeah.
Eight basically protects your hand.
Right.
And then the 10 and 12 are in the middle.
Well, the 8's basically so you don't break your knuckles the first time. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. So anyway, this retail sales report, you know, October is always the same every year, right? The unadjusted numbers are not that punky. The adjusted ones are kind of punky. Of course, you know, this is the diddling that comes out of the Census Bureau. So, you know, the adjusted ones are full of diddles. In any kind of a reasonably balanced economic environment, ha ha ha, I'd look at this and I'd say, what's the problem?
Okay. Well, I mean, is there?
I mean, furniture is down on an unadjusted basis or on a 10-month basis, okay. But you know what? That goes with home construction, right? Which is down because you know who's doing transactions.
Is there
there?
And retail sales number? Does that have a deflator or no?
No, this is not adjusted for inflation.
Okay, so if.
It's adjusted for so seasonal
the number came in at 0.3, right?
So the official language is adjusted for seasonal variation, holiday, trading day differences, but not price changes.
Right, so if it's 0.3, that's what it was, right?
Well, this says 0.4 gross, but then, you know, you've got the core, you got the minus autos and parts, and, you know, minus autos and gas, up 2.0, but here's the thing, the annualized change is only plus 2.8.
Which is exactly the same as the inflation rate
that they come out with. Well, like I said, so that's zero, right? If you believe the official inflation rate.
Yeah, if you believe it.
Then it's, well, which of course is a bunch of you-know-what. So essentially, yeah, maybe the reason you saw the sell-off on the release is that you got some people that are looking at this going, wait a minute, that's actually a negative number.
That's what I would say.
I mean, that would be, now this is with the diddling. The problem is that's with the adjustment, the seasonal adjustments, and seasonal adjustments are big. So, yeah, of course, you know, annualized.
No,
October's the same every year.
I was gonna say October.
Well, October's October. Right?
I know, but I'm trying to get through my brain here. If I was to predict and say, Carl. The October number, because it's October, should be down or up. I don't even know. December should be probably down, right? Because if you were going to adjust it.
Well, this is one of the. So here's the problem with all of this. Okay, you look at this number and you take what they reported, but the unadjusted October to October delta. Okay, October this year, October last year, both on the not adjusted figures, is 4.73%
year over year.
So if I look at, you know, I take October's
and I would say that's about where I would be on the inflation.
which is still a zero, right? Still a push. However, it's not a deeply negative number, which by their official adjusted report number is. Now, the thing that doesn't make any sense, okay, so now here's how you know that there's knob twisting going on within census. That's the delta in the not adjusted number. The delta in the adjusted number is, let's see, 718, 698 is 2.87. So now, excuse me, but on a 12-month basis, if I look at October versus October, the unadjusted and the seasonally adjusted number should be exactly the same. Well, last time I checked, Halloween comes on the same day every year, right? So does Christmas. So if there was no knob diddling inside this calculation, or if at least they were consistent in the way they diddled the knob, then you would think that the unadjusted on an annual basis and the adjusted on an annual basis would be exactly the same.
I don't see how they couldn't be, to be honest with you.
Chief, know how they couldn't be.
That's sort of how you... Okay, but I mean, on a yearly basis, it should come together. It's like at some point the household has to match the establishment, right?
Chief.
Yeah, I know.
You know full well that there is a difference between what a statistician will tell you is supposed to happen if nobody is cheating and what actually happens in the real world.
Hey, speaking of this CPI, I somehow.
And by the way, what the explanation is for that?
Well, one day. I actually dug in, and I must have done my best Carl by accident, and I actually found the page for the last 20 years where they adjusted the price of the F-150, and I've not been able to find it ever again. You know, so I don't know if they saw me in there and X'd me or what they did, but it was fascinating how these are adjustments. In other words, if you look at the price of the F-150 today versus 1980 or something, you can't just look at the price. You got to look at what now is included, especially with list price, what's included in the list price that wasn't. Now, so one year, if everybody had to pay extra $500 for air conditioning, and the next year air conditioning was included, clearly that's an adjustment. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think the 10 years I was looking at, Carl, all the different things that they did, automatic transmission became... Right. Automatic, this, that, and the other thing. And they made a pretty fair case, but over a 10-year period, they essentially had the price of the F-150 not going up at all because of all these adjustments. Now, at one level, if all of a sudden, the power steering is included instead of having to pay $150 for it, because the last year, matter of fact, I guess I ran into a guy who had a 79 Oldsmobile with a 455 motor, which was the optional motor, but he didn't get automatic transmission. It had three on the tree.
Right.
Guess what the guy told me? That in the entire 1979, they'd only sold five cars with three on the tree, where people did not get the automatic transmission.
Didn't take the automatic, right.
Yeah, so, plus, why you would do that if you got the bigger motor? So it does reach the point where, you got to include it in the list price. But what if... Now you reach the point, because Kenny was telling us, Polcari, that his wife got rear-ended in some SUV he bought. And it was like $25,000 to put all the backup cameras and all the sensor in it.
Right.
But now we're reaching a point where I honestly, if somebody stole my truck today, I would look for one no older or no younger than like 2006. I don't want any of that crap.
Part of the, I was just having this conversation. I went to go pick up my race packet for the weekend, and we ended up with a couple of people that were there at the bar having a brew, talking about my daughter, and she lives in her van part of the year. We took a 1500 Chevy and gutted it from the front seats back. There's an unbelievable amount of space in a modern SUV or truck that is wasted because of all the plastic panels and all that nonsense. Yeah. Right, so we tore all that out. Plus, I wanted access to the hard points to be able to mount the frame for the bed and things like that, so you don't eat it if you get in an accident. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of important, you know, some grade 8 bolts and, you know, stuff like this. So, you know, we did all of that. But there was a woman there who was talking about, you know, maybe trying to do the same thing. And she says, well, you know, which one was it? And I told her. And she says, well, you know, I've heard that, you know, the Fords are this and, you know, this and the Sprinters and this and that. And I said, look, I know somebody who had one of the Sprinters, one of the new, you know, the newer things. It's a Benz chassis. Had two engine failures inside of 60,000 miles. And between the two engine failures, it was like 30 grand.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you realize that
plus
like
you're getting, you're getting a used engine. You're getting a new one.
Yeah. And I said, you have to understand something here. That 1500 Chevy, I could put five engines and transmissions in it for that kind of money.
One of these days, I don't know. You're pretty much an expert on a lot of stuff. I'd love to dig. I'm fascinated by the salvage car market. I mean, if somebody bangs into the S-end of your Mercedes and they total it, right?
Now, right.
Try and buy one of those seats for less than $2,000 or $1,500 at a junkyard.
Oh yeah, no. I mean,
the motor is going to cost you 20G. I mean, when they total it, do they do? They sell it to somebody for what? I mean, they can't be selling it to them for $500 when every part on there is worth 10 times that.
Well, you can find out pretty much exactly where that is, because if you get in an accident and you get totaled, you can buy it back from the insurance company for the salvage value. The law says you have to be able to do that.
You know what? In some states, I still don't know if you can do that here in Illinois.
You can do it here. Or you can do it everywhere I've lived, except maybe in Illinois, because I never
but
had it's, any.
But now you got to... Actually, you know, Shanny did that. His wife... banged into
somebody. Yeah, well, the title's branded as a salvage vehicle, right? If you do that, so it's, you know, so I mean, you can, anybody that looks up, you know, looks up the VIN number from that point on knows that it was totaled.
Well, you also know if it had flood damage. You also know if it was hail, right. Hailstorm. Well, if it gets by looking totaled, at it, you can tell it was hailstorm.
Right, but the branding is, you know, is permanent with the VIN. It runs with the VIN number. Now there are some games that people have played. There are some states where you can wash titles through them and the branding will go away, which they've tried to close off. It's illegal as hell, but there are people that do it, and then, you know, because that branding puts a huge whack on anything you could ever get for it in the future. But that's there's a lot of money there. One of the things that's happened with the it used to be that you could go, you know, find a pick and pull place and go, you know, go find whatever interior piece or seat or whatever it is that you needed. That has all now been commoditized. There's now a site out there called carpart.com. You can go on there, put in the VIN number or the make, model, year, and essentially all the junkyards that you know, that rip cars apart and keep a stack of pieces in the, you know, in their warehouse, have all that stuff listed there. Was the way it, when Sarah had her driver's side window in her truck, somebody we think took a shot at it when we were in Albuquerque. You know, you call up Safelite, they want a couple $100 for that. Okay, well, guess what? It was $50 in about 30 minutes from here. So, you know, went and got the glass and, you know, took the panel off the door, put the, you know, got the shop back out to get all the pieces out, you know, put the new glass in.
Well, they still have a place you go pick your own part here.
It around here there are a couple, but it's in some states they've actually banned them.
Well, so, you know what they have done in Illinois, you can't bring in parts. You got to bring in a whole car.
Right. Well, that's because people are cutting off cats and stuff like that.
Yeah.
With the saws
or
the
wheels and stuff they have to have. But
yeah.
But I guess where I was kind of going with this is that this has nothing to do with me personally, but. When I learned to drive, the person who taught you how to drive said, if you don't have control enough of the car to be able to parallel park, you have no business driving.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to pay $800 for the car to park itself. The day I can't park it myself is the day I give up my keys. You know. I mean,
well.
And I know on a level street, you take your foot off the gas, you go 30 miles an hour, but pulls from one side to the other, you got an alignment problem. I don't need the car to tell me that.
Right.
Well, it'd be nice if it did, but I don't want to pay for it. Is that fair?
Yeah, and well, but you know, this is all so the amount of grift all the way through the economy, and in places like this, the same sort of thing. The stuff that you know, if you look at what they do in the CPI numbers with hedonic adjustment for quote-unquote quality, right? And vehicles is one of the most obscene places it happens, but certainly not the only one, right? I mean, they do the same kind of thing with televisions, right? Well, what if I don't want the super-duper 4K thing? I'm perfectly happy with the quality of a tube set. We can't buy one anymore, right? It's not available. So nobody makes them. So you don't have the choice to opt out of that so-called adjustment. Same thing with vehicles. I don't want a car that has 400,000 doodads on it. Just give me one that has an engine, a transmission. Yeah. You know, and by the way, I'd like the third pedal, too.
Yeah, but when was the last time you drove a stick?
Yesterday, my 2015 Mazda is a manual transmission. It's a six-speed manual.
You realize that they're like, they'll never be stolen.
Well, because that's a perfect anti-carjacking device, right?
Yeah.
And my daughter has my Jetta, my 03 Jetta, which the TDI, 50 miles a gallon, and it's a stick. She learned how to drive on that car, and it's sitting in the garage right now because she's out traveling around in her van. But here's the thing. The 15 was the last, did you say the 15 or 16, was the last year you could get the manual.
Yeah, I don't know if you can in pickups anymore.
Well, you can't on the cars, and I was talking to the Mazda dealer about this. I went in to buy some oil filters and, you know, just take them and, you know, at the parts desk. And I said, what's the real story on this? And I, you know, you ask the guy at the parts counter because he knows, right? The dealers will all lie to you, but he actually knows, and he's not trying to sell me a car.
He was what's her name in it, Melissa Tomei.
Well, he said the reality of it is that only 4% of the vehicles that we sold during those years that had them were people wanted the manuals.
Right. As I'm saying, it's like the one I have it on the tree. There was a we'll talk more about these sales in a second. We got a couple of minutes, but somebody wrote in the Quora. Is there a car that is not able to be stolen?
Anything with a manual transmission.
Well, so this lady writes in. She goes, here's my, I think it was a 62 or 64 Mercedes, like, two-seat convertible.
Right.
And there were, like, 8 knobs, you know, below the speedometer and the dashboard. Now, one of them was labeled.
Oh, okay.
And there was something, I've driven some older cars. The thing had a cold choke. Have you ever heard of a cold choke? I have not.
Oh, yeah.
What do you need a cold choke for?
Well, if it's cold.
No. It was a hot choke. It had a cold choke and a hot choke.
Right. It's two different.
What, I mean, once it's warmed up, what do you need a choke for? I mean,
No, it's just how cold is it outside?
No, I'm saying the regular choke, I know. There's the automatic choke and the manual choke, right?
Right.
But what we're talking about is an old carburetor. You close the butterfly on top to get the car started. So you essentially choke the air out of it.
Without that, it would not.
It would not start.
It would not start.
No. Well, if it did, you had to grind it forever. It might have, but it probably wouldn't have. So there used to be a thing you pulled out on the dash, and then it was an automatic choke. And as soon as you pressed down on the pedal, and the choke released. But I never heard of the one where you had to use, like they said, you could pull into a parking lot. The guy parked the car, and if you didn't know how to use the hot choke, you couldn't start it again. I never heard of that.
Well, this was before you had accelerator pumps. That was essentially that was probably the reason for it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, what are we doing here? I tried to talk to Kevin a little bit about it. We were all talking about something else. You know, part of my job, if to the extent that you can do it, is whenever markets look good and your people are making money and you're trying to, you know, protect them to the downside and so forth, is when do you roll your puts up and when do you do those things? You're constantly thinking about, everything looks great. By the way, what bad could happen? Now, I wish I was the guy that could tell you on a particular day if something ever does happen, when it's going to happen, because, you know, when I started, I couldn't tell you when the rally was going to be. I knew it was coming, but it was like a year. I was a year early. You think it's, what's vulnerable here, right? I think it's somewhere in this Bitcoin China mess is the vulnerability, Carl. I mean, you think I'm wrong or right?
I think you're wrong in one area, in that my suspicion is that the prime vulnerability is both in digital tulips without the flower,
Yeah.
But also, I think that's that leverage is a component of the general leverage in the tech stack, and it's the immediate reaction that I have when I look at that is that the centroid of it is in the AI garbage, and it's simply because in 40 years in the technology business, I have never seen a situation where the next generation of whatever it is not better, faster, cheaper.
Okay, one second. You're absolutely correct. You're getting no argument out of me. You're talking about the general issue we got in debt and everything else. By the way, I'm so far with you on this.
I'm saying, on one day,
if something happens,
right?
What's going to be the day?
Well, but this is what
nobody's going to wake up and say, "Geez, we got too much debt. I better sell." That's not going to happen.
No. What happens is somebody has a note roll and their new what they can get in the market doesn't cover the coupon payment.
Okay,
they can't cover it. And if you look in places where that risk is extreme, it's in places that are levered with all this AI stuff, but it's also in places you would think it wouldn't be, but just because of their current price earnings numbers, they are. For example, Salesforce is their current P is like 60 or 70 or something like this. 9 times sales they're selling at.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right? And by the way,
well, Microsoft's like 12 times sales. Look at the size of that place.
Well, but Chief, yeah. here's the thing that goes with this. Okay, so you would think that Salesforce would have a huge pre-tax operating margin because they're a hardware-less company. Okay, their primary spend is on people.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you're making cars, you're one of the huge sinks is. Well, gee, you got to have steel, you got to have the plant, you have all this PPE that's out there that is expensive as hell, and that's just the way it is. A software business does not have this. Their pre-tax operating margin is only 15%.
That's not so good. But
Chief, that's all through the industry. It's through the entire NASDAQ. I don't care where it's there.
The cloud hanging over everything.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. if you want to know who sets it off, it's someone like them or like MicroStrategy, which is basically turned into they were the ones that arguably set off the 2000 crash. They've turned into a Bitcoin hive.
Right.
Okay. Someone like them blows up. Now, when they blew up with the restatement in the early part of 2000, which happened to be contemporaneous with when the NAS blew. So there are plenty of people, myself included, who would say they were the trigger because there wasn't anything else obvious that caused it. It'd be fair to say, okay, well, that restatement came out right on the day that it went kaboom. That might have been it. I think it's going to be something like that, and it's going to be in a firm like that. Now, it probably won't be them because lightning almost never strikes twice in exactly the same place, right? But would I be at all surprised if it's somewhere like CRM or, one of NVIDIA's subs?
I wouldn't. We got a dash here, but one of the dudes on TV was saying if China gets in a little bit of a pickle and doesn't show up for one of these auctions, it happened in Britain, evidently, where the 10-year rate will be 6 and not 4.5 all of a sudden on one day.
Well, I don't see. China has been to a large degree backing away from our bond market.
Well, maybe it wouldn't just be China. He goes, if all of a sudden you get an inflation report
The last several, several years they've become a lot less important. But yes, if you had a failed auction in the wrong place, where Treasury now realize that there's no such thing as technically a failed auction. They'll pull it.
Right.
But if they do that. That's you can't hide. That's instantaneous, and the reaction will be instantaneous. And by the way, this morning, we're now seeing this this curve steepener going. We're now positive, and have been for the last few days on the 10-year versus the 13-week.
Yeah, we have. I mean, we'll talk more about this on Tuesday because we're not trying to be doggy downer. We're saying you're always supposed to be looking for what could possibly happen, especially if that's your job is to protect people, which is what mine is, and you obviously like doing some of the same stuff. What's it going to be, if at all? And we hope maybe never at all, right? But what can it be? I mean, mean, I had no idea to this day why it was August of 82 the rally started. It could easily have started in May. It could have started in November, right? But it happened on that day.
Yeah, I think my suspicion is that there's the cold reality smack up the side of the head is coming here. All the rah 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 and all the stuff that Trump is going to do, if he's actually going to get any of this under control and prevent a detonation in the federal government, he has to do it literally on the first day of his administration. And he's got supposedly with Musk and Ramaswamy and all the I hear a lot of bluster and BS, but if they actually come out and do it with people getting indicted and no BS things that are going to make a difference, if this stops at 50% losses in the markets, you're going to be fortunate.
Well, on a happy note, but have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. S&P futures on 36, NASDAQ futures on 207. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.